Well, we're hearing the song of a whale, but we're also hearing Ros Bandt playing the tarhu in a Japanese radio studio, live to air, in fact. It's a track from a new double CD collection called Tarhu Connections, and we'll be talking to the composer and tarhu player Ros Bandt in just a moment. Let's listen to the rest of this. That's Whale Song by Ros Bandt. Ros Bandt was playing the tarhu there, and she was doing so in Wakayama in a radio station. She's in a radio station in Melbourne now. Welcome to the music show, Ros.
Thank you, Andy.
Let's talk maybe in general terms, first of all, about this album, which I suppose could be subtitled Travels with My Tarhu. You've taken it to many, many places, and perhaps you could say, in just in general terms, first of all, before you demo the thing, what the tarhu is.
Oh, this wonderful spike fiddle, the tarhu, invented by Peter Biffin from Armidale, one of the world's greatest luthiers, is an Australian invention that's like no other sound instrument I've ever played, and I've played and made quite a few over the years. And it came to me through a complete distraction of trying to take a rebec to practice on in Europe one year.
And this is a medieval fiddle.
A medieval fiddle, yes. I had a small one and I needed a better case. And I went to Ross Daly's site, and because he plays small lyras that would have fitted in there, and it said, go to Peter Biffin's website, www.spikefiddle. It will change your life. And so after 3 hours, I had ordered one of these and I did not take the rebec to Europe. And so I think 2005, I set off with this a magnificent long-necked tarhu with four cello strings and eight sympathetic strings inside a cone which shudders and shakes inside this beautiful kind of wooden beret like a bee's head with beautiful holes all made like a Renaissance lute, fluted and caught with a round circle at the back of this round ball that's at the end of the neck. And then I'm playing it with a range of spikes. Most people who play the long-necked tarhu And there are a range of tahus of different sizes he makes for Hindustani players, and Ross Daly has some that he's invented with short necks and long necks. I'm playing the long neck tahu, and I'm playing it because I'm coming from the viola da gamba background. I'm playing it with spikes onto the ground. So I'm using this as a divining tool. So it's like a great spinning top. The spike goes onto the ground into the carpet, and then the spike is about, it's up to knee height, and then the bowl of the instrument so I can bow above my knee, and then the neck is coming way past on top of me. So it's quite a large instrument, weighs 9 kilos in its case to take around, and I'm playing it with a range of bows, one made by Peter Watchhorn, which is a 17th century Baroque gamba bow of Suriname snakewood with Mongolian horsehair and 35,000-year-old mammoth tusk, which certainly challenged my environmental principles.
I think after 35,000 years, it's okay.
Well, they say, you know, that there's such his call was, you know, well, there's a great supply of this now and it's melted anyway, so why doesn't somebody like, you know, Ros Bandt use these things, since the Suriname timbers also felled from the rainforest, you know.
Yes.
It's the springiest wood, and the bow is really very beautiful. I'll be playing a solo on that in a minute. And I also am working with Cretan folk bows, one with bells, which we'll hear in Tragoudia on those tracks of the goat songs, because the goat bell and the goat flute and this instrument have a beautiful age-old relationship since going back to goat herding through Neolithic times in Greece. And I also play in the cistern with a lyra bow without bells on it with Natalia Mann. And so there's a variety of kind of sound activators, and I also prepare this thing with chopsticks sometimes, and I sometimes hit with, this is the viola da gamba bow bouncing, so I can percuss with it, and you can hear the resonance coming out then, and they all make quite a different sound. And the bell bow. Which is very nice if you want to be a goat.
How are the bells attached to it?
They're on very large safety pins. No, but they slide along on the bow, on the wood of the bow.
Oh, they move.
Itself. So this is a 19th century folk bow tradition in Crete, around the Rethymnon. These are from a Rethymnon maker. And yes, the lyra is a Cretan small bowed instrument, which has influenced me a lot because I've been in Hanyar a lot, playing and learning this instrument and adapting a very unique style in all these different ways. And, of course, the spike, wherever I'm going, is telling me and giving me vibrations and readings of where I am and what's going on with the soundscape that I'm performing in. And, as you know, I do a lot of work in bizarre archaeological sites and enclosed in chambers and industrial sites. So all those acoustic spaces are informing the resonant frequencies that I'm getting through the sympathetic strings in my whole body, up through the floor, under my hands where I'm stopping the strings, and under the bow where I'm feeling how my bull of Minos, that I call my wonderful tahu because he's such an animal, is responding to me all the time, and I'm having to respond to it. And sometimes it doesn't want to come out of his case, like in Wakayama when they were bringing the dead whales in on the harpoons, bleeding, half alive, disgusting. So that was how that piece came about. I would never have even thought to make such a piece, but that was happening at the time, and that was midnight, and they were doing it right then outside the window pretty well from where I was. So this wonderful tahu, this abode spike fiddle.
You said you've got four cello strings.
Yes, on the top here.
On the top. And so these are in front of you.
Yes.
Rather, in front of the instrument.
That's right.
And where are the sympathetic strings?
They're up through the neck. And so if I play them with a feather,
You mean they're actually inside the neck?
Inside the instrument, and they're bolted to a little cedar cone that is adjustable with an amazing... If you go to the website, you can see the whole construction detail of profile of this that Peter's very generously shown to the world. And these sympathetic strings can be tuned to any mode you want of the day.
Mm.
So I'm putting a feather in right inside the neck in front of the bridge. And behind the bridge, there's this gold bar where you can nut those down to different kinds of pressures. So the whole thing is quite a machine.
But you can tune, you can obviously, you so that the tuning pegs up the top.
Yeah, it's 12.
And the sympathetic strings ring out according to
what I'm playing.
Well, obviously, yeah. According to what you're playing, and also according to how you tune the sympathetic strings.
Exactly. Yes.
So it's a built-in acoustic, isn't it?
It's amazing, and I think that's what attracts the Hindustani players to it, because it's like a Comanche with its own acoustic speaker that you carry around in, so it's much louder than the traditional instruments.
Yeah.
And for my purposes, I'm looking at the harmonic frequencies and the amazing possibilities for the angles of the bows, bowing right up the top of the neck in a lot of pieces at different angles, which excites the different frequencies of the different strings. And so the range of what you heard, you know, of those...
Yeah.
It's just there under your fingers, so you can have whatever you like. Or if you start bowing a normal, like a nice traditional note, and then you just start travelling the angle of it a bit. I'm just bowing that same string up the neck with the same bow, different angles. So I'm interested in those airy sounds for the environmental polar bear and the ice cracking and that... So it's a complete sound world for sound artist, you know.
Yes.
And it was a bit of a distraction to find myself going around the world with this 9-kilo huge bowed instrument when I do all these installations and everything. For a whole 10 years, if I don't arrive with my hat and the tahu, everybody says, where's Ivor? I'm thinking, my goodness, you know, I've become a sort of a tahu player, which is, you know, I'm basically a conceptual artist that does a range of things. But this has really grounded me to
taken over your life,
acoustic spaces for the last 10 years. So I did want to celebrate that time.
Well, I'm going to ask you if you could play something for us in the perhaps rather less inspiring acoustic of an ABC radio studio. But nevertheless, you know, we haven't got any whales either for you. But you're going to play a piece which, in fact, on the CD occurs in a Venetian mansion. But we can't provide that acoustic for you, I'm afraid.
No, but I think the ABC's done very well, because we first recorded that piece here in this, in the Iwaki actually, but the room itself is a beautiful room in Hania in Crete, in the northwest Minoan town of Hania, which is otherwise called Kidonia. And in this house, it's a 14th century mansion with a Turkish mezzanine. And in this mezzanine, it's like a box. So I'm up a staircase with my head nearly in the box in the ceiling, and I'm hearing and learning all these different techniques that I've been discovering over the last years and returning to this Venetian mansion called Teresa again and again. And then when I was there, the first time I went there, I went with La Romanesca, and that's where I fell in love with Hania. And so this piece was written for Hartley, and it's the only piece on the whole CD, I think, that's written out apart from a huge graphic score for the enormous installation of wind harps, which is completely different. But this is actually a little tune that people can play, and it's written out on the CD. Ruth plays it on her Viola da Gamba, and we do this really lovely sharing, because I do owe her a lot to my early bowed practice and discovery. And then moving to the tahu, she said to me once, oh, the tahu's just the instrument for you. And so the divergent path has happened. But here we're going back to this very nice 14th century Italian influence in this. So I am playing with the Viola da Gamba bow, and it will sound like the mezzanine room, the Arabic influence at the top in the mezzanine of the Turkish renovation in the building, and then a more stylized Venetian little dance in the middle.
Ros Bandt playing a piece called From the Venetian Mansion, a piece of her own composing, and she played it on the Tahu in the ABC studio in Melbourne. Ros, let's talk a little about, you mentioned La Romanesca and
yes,
some of these places that you have been working in and recording in for this collection are places of considerable antiquity. Which, you know, your background playing medieval music in La Romanesca, is there a connection there that you feel, that you know, in a sense, the music of this place, of its history, almost before you put the bow on the instrument?
I have a background in classics as well, and I have an ancient Greek scholar for a partner, so we're always in the Mediterranean. And in the of La Romanesca, of course, we did all the music of the Romance languages in toured extensively in Spain and Italy and France and all over the continent, really. In just before I left a few months, about 8 weeks ago, I played the Animart Multimedia Festival in Midnight. I brought in the full moon at midnight, and everybody walked down to this sacred spring where people for thousands of years have gone for their pilgrimage before the before all of the things that happened at the Olympic Games. And so these sites are charged with incredible power, and to sit on the side of the road halfway up with the mountains of Delphi behind you and the full moon coming through black clouds and all these people walking to hear you play is just a sensational ritual experience that we just don't have these kinds of things very much in Australia. And so these spaces are loaded with amazing knowledges and information which the Tahu helps me explore and discover. And so, yes, Turkey, the Neolithic site of Gigantia in Malta, in Gozo, you know, Lake Mungo in Australia, it predates all of this antiquity. And my latest piece for Ancient Greek Lyre, of course, posits these multi-channeled lyre recordings over bird recordings of the lyrebird, which is, you know, is the bird with the oldest DNA in the world. And it's very interesting to reconsider Tim Lowe's premise that, you know, these birds have all been sourced, the songbirds we were imitating from Europe, have all come from Australia.
Yes.
And that information, you know, the south-north axes need to be tipped over and getting into better balance. And I think that that's why I did two CDs, one Pacifica and one Mediterraneo.
We're going to Yerebatan Sarınici. What's that?
Oh, this is one of the most magic places in the world. This is an underground system in Istanbul. It was shut for many years. It's a Byzantine water tank for the Topkapi Palace, and we just basically put the eddy roll on the chair, and we went to each end of this magnificent palace that's all over water with a few walkways, and it's all dark with Romanesque recycled ceilings. The acoustics unbelievable. So everything's totally acoustic. There's no mixing, post-production or anything. It's basically cut in half. And that's the sound of this amazing resonant place. It's very damp, drips falling on us from the ceiling.
Oh, the drips are a very important part of the overall piece.
Yes, and it's like we can't see each other, you know. It's so far, the corridors, and it's so dark. And it's just so magical.
Well,
so
we'll imagine that. This. Now maybe we'll close our eyes or something.
But that's a great idea. It's very dark.
Thank you very much indeed for coming on today's show. Thank you very much for bringing the instrument with you. We're going to hear it again, the Tahu, again together with the harp of Natalia Mann. And this is one of the tracks on the Mediterraneo disc. There are two discs, Mediterraneo and Pacifica, and this is, as I said, Yerebatan Sarnici. And that's it for today's music show and this weekend's music shows. They were produced by Rosa Gowan and Maureen Cooney, technical production by Isabella Tropiano, Simon Branthwaite and Tim Simons. We'll go out with the sound of Ros Bent's music. The profits, by the way, from these CD sales go to education programs for refugees in the Young Citizens of the World program in Hania in Crete.